string back with an arrow there. Sorry. As that hunter was sitting in his tree stand, as he saw that deer approach, with him he had his bow. He pulled back on that bow. He had done his homework well. He knew that that arrow would fly straight and true. And as he released that arrow, he had the confidence that it would hit its mark. And it did. He went home with meat for the family. Welcome each one to the service here. My wife and I have enjoyed the weekend thus far. We have been made to feel at home. So thank you for that. Mervyn had asked me, I think, the beginning of the week, if I would consider sharing this morning. I told him right away that I am not an ordained brother, but if they want me to, I will be willing to do that. Steve then called me a few days later, and I told him the same thing. In the meantime, I was contemplating what to share. Then Steve made a remark to me that over the phone when I talked to him, something along the line of a continuation of yesterday. My mind was drawn to the fact of keeping the hearts of our children. Keeping the hearts of our children. I struggled with that title. I struggled with that being laid upon my heart. I see my weaknesses. I see where we have failed. I felt I don't qualify for a subject like this. In the time frame that Mervyn called and Steve called, my mind was going down another direction. And I actually contemplated bringing those notes along in case God would lead in a different direction. But I felt God's leading on this one. So with your prayers and the help of the Lord, I'd like to share some things along the line of keeping the hearts of our children. As I saw the amount of children that were up here this morning, I had to think of one thing that I forgot to share yesterday. And I don't want to dwell on yesterday, but there's one thing that I'd like to share concerning the amount of children that I saw up here. God has put into our head, and especially children, a brain that can absorb anything that is put into there. It doesn't take a young child along. They don't have to be reading for them to memorize a song and sing along without being able to read. So my challenge to you as parents is, you have the opportunity to put into that young child's mind many things. So do that diligently. I understand in the Hebrew culture, the young boys, by the time they were, before they were in their teenagers, maybe about 10 or 12, They had memorized the first five books of the Bible: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and Numbers. Now, to most of us, probably most of us, that's boring reading. But they memorized those five books. So, young parents, put everything into that child's mind that you can cram into it. That will stick with them for the rest of their lives. Malachi 5, Malachi 4, verse 5. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers. And we as homeschool parents have a golden opportunity to keep that heart. There's work that needs to be done, yes, but we can keep that heart. Turn with me to Psalm 127. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is a man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Hence the opening remarks concerning the hunter and his arrows. We see, as arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. As we look at our children, we need to look at them as a, and I'm sure we do, as a blessing from God. I'm sure you have prayed over each one, and you are thankful for each one that God has given to you. It says, happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. It doesn't tell us how many need to be in that quiver. For us, it was five. For some of you, it's more. For some of you, it might be less. There are families that have one child, and I will say, if God gives you one child, you can also consider your quiver full. You don't have to argue with God that my quiver is not full. God gives you one child, your quiver is full. Who has the youngest baby here this morning? Could I ask you to stand? The youngest baby. Back in the way in the back. How old is your child? 3 weeks tomorrow. Okay. I'm not going to come back there. You may sit down. But I'm guessing it's a cute little baby. I'm guessing the mom and dad oohed and aahed over that baby. They probably tried to figure out, does it look like mom or like dad? Then, of course, then the church ladies come and ooh and ah over the baby. And they also try to figure out who it looks like. And I'm not sure how this all works or how it all comes about. Some of that thing is strange to me. Some can say it looks like grandma, and some say it looks like the other side grandma, and on and on and on. But that's okay. And that we do that. But I'd like to remind us that baby from the day it was born has a sinful nature. And it does not take long for a child to make its wishes, his displeasure known. Our children are like arrows. The difference between the hunter that I referred to and children as arrows. This hunter had an arrow that was made, and he just bought it off the shelf. And it was an arrow that was straight and true. And he knew that when he would release it, it would fly straight and true. We are given children. We are given I will put it this way. We've been given a stick. And we've been given a rod for correction. In this illustration, I'll say a knife. And we whittle away at that stick, making an arrow. The day will come when we will release that arrow. Okay? The bow. One purpose for the bow is to send the arrow. We as parents are that bow. We are preparing our children for the day we release them and send them on their flight, so to speak. Our children are as arrows, as we see here in Psalm 127. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. We have the golden opportunity to mold that arrow. And we only have one chance. We only have one chance to mold that arrow. But the day finally comes when we do release that arrow. Proverbs 22:6 talks about training up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. I'm not exactly sure what that all means, but I believe the things that we put into our children's mind, verses, memory verses about God, they might try to run from what we have taught them. But I am convinced they will never lose that teaching. We talked about Moses yesterday. We know the story. He was put in the basket in the river. Pharaoh's daughter came and took him up. He was given back to his mother to nurse him till he was old enough to be taken to Pharaoh's daughter. I'm not sure what Moses' parents told him over those times that he was with them. And I'm not sure how old Moses went when he then went to live with Pharaoh's daughter, his mother, so to speak. But I would picture that he learned some things in his young life before he went to Pharaoh's into Pharaoh's palace that he never forgot. Our children too, regardless which path they take, will, I'm convinced, will never forget what they have been taught. I've broken this down into a few different stages, and I will put ages to that, and I'm not sure if that's just something for us to go by. And this could vary, but the first 8 years, we are training them. We are training them obedience. The child has very little input in that. We tell Johnny to pick up the toys, and we expect Johnny to pick up the toys. We expect him to do it right now without arguing. We expect him to do it even though he is busy doing something else. We tell Johnny, pick up the toys, and he drops what he is doing, and he picks up the toys. You can't do that with a 24-year-old, okay? You see where I'm getting at? There is a time frame in a young child's life that you're the boss, if you know what I'm saying. You tell them what to do, and they are obedient. Of course, with that obedience comes what we talked about yesterday, a relaxed home life. They are content and things like that. As they continue to grow, things start changing. Maybe the next 8 years, they continue to mature. We still expect obedience, but the child starts to have a little bit more of say-so in different areas of their life. We had, for instance, I don't think you give your first grader a whole lot of choice what they want to do in school. You just pick the curriculum. It might be CLP, and you tell them, this is what we're using. Maybe later on in life, as they get into the upper grades, we can give them that opportunity, if used as a parent want to start choosing their own curriculum with our input. Not just letting them choose anything, but okay, would you know... What do you want as far as your lessons? We start, you know, responding to them in a different way than what we did when they were little children. We give them more responsibility, but it is still under our authority and supervision. We as parents, my wife and I, enjoyed to see our children grow. And I think most people do. I think there'd be something wrong if our children wouldn't grow. The three-week-old baby in the youngest one here, it won't be too long before that child is starting to smile. And it will probably be announced to at least the family. It probably won't be announced up here in church, but, you know, the baby smiled at me. It's a big thing. As age progresses, it starts to crawl, and we rejoice in that. It walks. We rejoice in that. We, even as our children mature and turn to the age of 15, 16, where they can get their driver's license. They drive out the drive the first time without us in the vehicle. Personally, I enjoy to see our children do that, spread their wings, things like that. I'll relate a sad story. I have cousins in northern Indiana, among the Amish there. And the one mother, my cousin's wife, as their only daughter, was at the age of 16. Someone asked how she feels about that and their child being at that age. With a hanging head and slumped shoulders, she made this remark: "We just have to let them go." She knew she was probably expecting her child to sow wild oats. And we have so much more to look forward to. I think we can, with squared shoulders, watch our children grow. If you have a pencil, paper, pen, I'd like to have some input here. Write a few things down, and then I'll have some questions for you to help me with. There's been a number of studies done in universities, and there was also an attempt to analyze those results. This involved 4,000 teenagers who were attending high school. Now, this was not a Christian organization. These were not Christian teenagers or from Christian parents. These were just teenagers in general. With the idea, what type of parents are most successful in passing on their values to their children? Then it also says, what lessons can we as Christians learn from the secular studying on parents? There are four types of parents that I like to look out at. So 1, 2, 3, and 4 on your paper. The first one is the neglectful parent. And all you need to write down is those who have low love and low in discipline. Those are the parents that let their children do as they please, yet there is really no love there or love shown to their children. The next set of parents is the permissive parent. This one is high in love, but low in discipline. These parents are afraid that being strict would drive their children away. But one thing they do, they give them love. They give them lots of love. But there again, they're afraid that if we spank little Johnny, he will not turn out right. So we give them love, but no discipline. That's number two. Number three is a strict, demanding parent who rules their children with an iron hand. These are strong in discipline, but weak in love. Strong discipline with an iron hand, but they are weak in love. Then we have the other one, that authoritative parents. These parents are strong in both love and discipline. The children are loved, They have a warm and relaxed relationship with their parents and the parents with the children. But there is no doubt who is in charge. There is discipline there. Now remember, this is in the asking teenagers, not in a Christian organization. Now, how did these children turn out? I find interesting. There are three areas that the study, four areas that the study looked at. And with the, you have the numbers, you have the high love, the high discipline as number four. You have high love but low discipline as number three. You have low love and high discipline in two, I believe, and then the low love and low discipline, or not much discipline and not much love. They looked at self-image. As the children grow up, how did they feel about themselves? Were they emotionally stable? Were they well adjusted? Now, when it comes to the self-image of the child, at least give me the ones that you think would do the best and those that you think would do the worst in our high love, high discipline, low love, low discipline, or in those. Which do you think turned out the best? Two over here. Go ahead. Number four. The ones that high in love and discipline. Okay? You were another one. The same thing? Okay. Which ones did the worst? High, the worst ones? High in discipline, low love. Not in the respect one. Anyone else? Back there. Number one. It's close. Actually, the ones that did the worst on the respect part was the number two. Those that were permissive parents were high in love, but low in discipline. The next one was the response to discipline outside the home. Which children developed a wholesome respect for authority figures, such as teachers, policemen, or church leaders? Here it does mention church leaders. Which do you think fared the best, and which fared the worst? Just shout it out. That's fine. Four, as the best. That's right. Those that were high in discipline and love fared the best when it came to respecting discipline outside of the home. Which fared the worst? Number two? No. Number one? No. Number three? Why? Awkward view of authority? Okay. Any more thoughts? Why would the high, if there is a parent that is high in discipline, why would their children, and low in love, why would their children turn out the worst when it comes to responding to outside authority? Abusive? Okay, that could be. The authority was misused? Yes. Mm-hmm. No relationship? Okay. Very good. This is one thing that it said with this study, and I find it very sobering. Parents who were harsh and overly demanding, or those that were very high in discipline but low in love, had the highest rate of rebellious and disrespectful children. They also looked at it as religion and lifestyle. And the results were somewhat the same. Those that had high discipline and high love made, in those two categories, religion, and lifestyle, wanting to do what their parents were doing. The high love, the high discipline always came out on top. And it always kind of followed the same line. And both of those, when it came to lifestyle and religion, the parents that were strict and demanding, they ruled their children with an iron hand, came out last when it comes to religion and lifestyle. I'm not going to ask for your input here, but I will ask the question, and I want you to seriously look at your own life. I look at my own life. Where do you as a father fit in these four categories, or as parents? Do you have high love? Do you have high discipline? I know some of us would say we're in between, and that's okay. Do you have high love but very low discipline? Do you love your children that much that you don't want to hurt their feelings? You don't want to say no? Do you have low love, no love at all, but you rule your home with an iron fist? Or are you low in love and also low in discipline? Check your own life. If you do need to make adjustments, do so. With having a survey done with 4,000 teenagers, I don't think we as a church can expect. Yes, we can. God can take a young man that comes from a low love situation, and he can be converted, and he can be a successful man or a successful lady for God. But let's make sure what we're doing with our children that will have a lasting impact of where they come out at. I would like to give two accounts that I personally know the people. Then we'd like to look at a few accounts in the Bible, looking at Eli, looking at David, looking at Abraham, and the father of the prodigal son. We'd like to look at those beforehand. But first, a few accounts that I know personally. I know the family well. He was an ordained minister in a church, And he had a daughter that went her own way. She was involved in a relationship with a fellow that the parents were not happy. They decided to get married regardless of what the parents say. They ran off to the courthouse and got married that way. Of course, there was conflict in the family that way. But he, as an ordained leader of the church, told his fellow leaders that I will step back, not in leadership, but in this family situation. And you, as a church, deal with this situation, and I will stand behind what the church says. The outcome of that story is the couple did end up coming back to the church. And as far as I know, they are faithful members. Here I see a father that, yes, he loved his children, but he was wise enough to allow the church to deal with that situation and him not being involved and telling the church, you do as you feel led. And it worked out beautifully. The other side of the coin, I know the family well. There was church issues, and the father gave the 16-year-old the okay to go to the leadership and tell them exactly what he thought of them. And he did so. Later on, that mother of that 16-year-old son came to my mom with tears in her eyes. Where had we gone wrong? Their son went wayward. Their children went wayward. At least one married a divorced man. Turned their backs on God. Then the mother is crying. Where had we gone wrong? Where had we gone wrong? Yes, we need discipline. We need high level of discipline. But we also need love. We get those turned around, get those mixed up in a different order. There might be reaping of consequences that we as parents do not want. I encourage you as young families that check your family, the direction you're going, and you have the golden opportunity to change that course and do so. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 3. First Samuel 3, verse 13. Samuel was a young boy, and he was brought to the to live at the temple with Eli the priest. And God spoke to Samuel one night. We know the story. God called him. Samuel runs to Eli and says, here I am, you called. Eli finally tells him that it is the Lord calling and tells him how to answer. The Lord calls Samuel again, and these were the words that the Lord had for Samuel in verse 13. For I have told him, Eli, that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. Here was a punishment to be laid out, because Eli's sons had made themselves vile, according to here. But the sad part is, he restrained them not. I don't know, was Eli a man of high love? I don't know what his level of love was there. But it would appear, according to this verse, that he was low in discipline. Kind of left them go as they pleased. And it did not work out well. 1 Kings chapter 1. We have high respects for David. He was a man after God's own heart. And he was. David was also human. And like I said from the beginning, I struggled with this whole thing because I see my own weaknesses. First Kings chapter 1, verse 5 and 6. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggath, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. And his father had not displeased him in anything in saying, Why hast thou done so? And he was a very goodly man, and his mother bare him after Absalom. There again we see Adonijah wanting to take the kingdom from his father. But it does tell us in verse 6, and his father had not displeased him at any time in saying, Why hath you done so? We could also go into the account of Tamar and what happened there, where then Absalom took things into his own hands and slew his half-brother. And David's response to all of that. Yes, we love David. We love that he was a man after God's own heart. And like I said, I believe that. But here again, it would appear like his connection with his sons was more of maybe love and very little discipline. Genesis 18:19 tells us, For I know Abraham, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the word of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. We love these verses. We love the outcome of these verses. I know Abraham, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord. I like to look at the prodigal son in Luke 15 a little bit. Luke chapter 18. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the Genesis one yet. Luke 15. Let me see. I think I'll read the whole story. starting in verse 11. And he said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat. And no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and went to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto his father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to be merry. Now his elder son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of his servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry, and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answered, saying to his father, and he answering said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandments. And yet thou never gavest me a kid, that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. And he said unto him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. I don't know you families here well. There is a possibility here that there is someone here who has a wayward son or daughter. My heart goes out to you. Don't give up. Don't give up. Yes, the son is maybe no longer at home. He has taken his own route. One thing you can do is pray. Pray for that son or that daughter. One thing I noticed in this account, two things. Who is the first person that son thought of when he was in the pig pen? He thought of his father. My father loves me. my Father will take me back. He knew that without a doubt. The Father was watching. He hadn't given up. I don't know what for time frame was when, you know, was involved here. But it appears like the Father was on a daily basis watching that road. Is my son coming back today? Don't give up. Keep praying. Keep watching the road. You have taught your son many things. And the first thing that he might think about when he is in the gutter, in the pig pen, is Mom and Dad. Then be there when he comes back. Be there when he comes back. You know, we have the opportunity when they're small to build conviction into them by being strong fathers, by being supportive mothers, doing things together as a family. We taught them well. But we all know the fact that the time comes when we somewhat let them release that arrow. And just for the conversation part of it, I put down the as a 20-year-old. And it might be it's before that we start relating to our grown-up children more on an adult level. We are still, if they're still living in our home, we still have the right as parents to tell them, no, TV is not coming into our home. We have that right. But they are at the age where we need to let them make some of those decisions on their own. And children or parents with young children, that time will come a lot sooner than what you expect. You that are holding young babies, they will be 20 years old before you know what happened. Okay? We only have one chance to mold and shape that arrow. And we teach them well. And they become fine young men and fine young ladies. You know, and as they enter those upper teenage years going into adulthood, it is important that we still keep their heart. That's a challenge. They are no longer the 2-3-year-old that you tell them, Johnny, pick up the toys. They are responsible adults. And we start to relate to them in a different way. And we then become their, maybe more like an advisor or a friend. And we can start to have grown-up conversations with them. And that in itself is a blessing. You know, yes, they struggle. That we as parents that have older children can come alongside them and encourage them. We can tell them what direction we think they should go. We can, you know, give them direction. But then we need to maybe step back, and the decision is theirs, so to speak. We need to be careful that we don't treat our 20-year-olds as a child. It'll probably backfire. Now, teenagers, don't go home and tell your parents that I'm on my own. Okay? Don't do that. That's not what I'm trying to get across. And you are still living at home. You are still somewhat under your parents' authority there. Still respect them. Take their advice. They still have good advice. I know I went through the stage, and I think many children go through that stage where dad and mom don't know anything. We walked that road before you did. I think we parents still have good advice for you. I'd encourage you teenagers, early 20 years old, to still take the advice of your parents. I guess one reason I took 20 as an age to release that arrow. If we go into the Old Testament, as the children journeyed through the wilderness, they always complained that this was wrong, this was wrong. God finally told them in my own words that, okay, that's enough. No one that is 20 years old and older is going to enter the promised land. That's the only reason I'm taking 20. So, you know, that's just for, I don't think there's a certain age that we need to let them go. But there were probably those there that were 18, 19, that because their parents were complaining, they also complained. But because of their age, they were still allowed to go into the promised land. It was the 20 years old and older that were not allowed into the promised land. So be there for your adult children. Be their friend. Be their advisor. Take an interest in the things that they do. Your adult children have many interests. Take an interest in what they're doing. Keep that relationship with them open. Talk with them in an adult manner. Take an interest in their friends. Take an interest in their peers. Be involved in things that they're doing. Yes, it takes time. It takes effort. And as we get older, our enthusiasm to do things isn't like it was 20 years ago. But do things with your adult children. It will pay off well in the end. Our youngest is 23. And if you look at the age here of age 20, we have tried our best as parents to mold that arrow, our 5 arrows that God had given to us. And in one sense, we released that arrow and sent it on its way. Some arrows we see are flying straight and true. There are others of our children that as we see the arrow fly, it's wobbling a little bit. that arrow, we thought we did a good job, but for some reason that arrow is just wobbling a little bit. We can still have that influence, but the work is done. The work of training is pretty well done, and we can still pray. And I believe, those arrows can, even though they wobble at times when we release, those arrows can still take a true course. That's the blessing of, that's the difference between the hunting and us with the arrow. That arrow might wobble, but if that person lets God take a hold of him, that arrow can fly true and straight. So even those that are older, like we, that have left those arrows fly, we see that wobble. Let's not give up. God can still do your work. God can take our imperfect parenting and still make something beautiful out of it. So, young people, you have a privilege that my wife and I no longer have, so to speak. You have your children, you have your young children on your lap, you have that arrow in your lap, and you can shape that arrow. Do so diligently. Do so with all your might. Put your all into carving that arrow. You will never regret. Yes, the time might seem difficult at times, but you will never forget what you put into your children's lives when they were young. We have this saying at home with our children, and I'm not sure where we got the saying, but one of them will do something that we as mom and dad somewhat roll our eyes at. You know, why do they do that? And our remark is, where have we failed? And of course, then we all have to laugh about it. Our children know what we mean. But and it's a two-way street. They know that what they're doing isn't, and we do it in a fun way, so it's not, you know, really condemning, that they realize that what they're doing is maybe not what they're supposed to be doing. That where have we failed? And we have failed many times. Coming back to young people, you have one chance to mold that arrow. The time will come too soon that you will release that arrow. So take that responsibility seriously. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we are thankful to you this morning for your goodness to us. We realize as parents that we fail our children many times. So Lord, help us as we train them, and then as we turn them over to you, and as they take their own course in life, might you work in our children, adult children's hearts, that their heart might be true to you in spite of our failures, for there are many. Our children, we know, do not expect perfect parents, but they do expect us to be honest with them and with you. Help us to do that. Thank you for the church here. Continue to guide them as they train and teach their children, that they might do it with all diligence. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.